Welcome to Eye to Eye, the podcast of the Royal College of Ophthalmologists. My name is Sunil Mamtora, and I will be your host. Today, I'm joined by Alessandro Rabiolo, the incoming glaucoma fellow for the Moorfields Eye Hospital in London. And today we're going to be talking about his paper entitled Hypotony-Associated Complications After Deep Sclerectomy, Incidence, Risk Factors, and Long-Term Outcomes. Alessandro, thank you very much for joining me today on the podcast to talk about your work.
Thank you very much, Sunil. I want to thank the Royal College for the opportunity to be here today.
You know, before we go into your paper and the details surrounding it, I was just wondering, for the listeners who don't know too much about deep sclerectomy, if you could just really explain, what is deep sclerectomy?
So yes, sure, Sunil. Deep sclerectomy is an alternative surgical technique to trabeculectomy, which was developed more than 20 years ago in the attempt to minimize hypotony and hypotony-related complications. The main principle of deep sclerectomy is that the eye is not opened, meaning that deep sclerectomy is a non-penetrating glaucoma surgery, and there is no continuity between the subconjunctival space and the anterior chamber.
So, you know, when you say that it's a non-penetrating glaucoma procedure, you know, does that mean that, you know, IOP targets and IOP reduction is inferior to trabeculectomy then?
That's a very good question, and there are some data showing that probably this sclerectomy is not as good as trabeculectomy in lowering the IOP. So it may not be the best procedure in patients requiring a single-digit IOP.
You know, I didn't actually hear about the procedure of deep sclerectomy until the end of my second year of training, and it wasn't done at all in the unit where I started my training. You know, what proportion of glaucoma specialists do you think perform deep sclerectomy?
It's a very good question. It depends a lot where you practice. It is very common in some part of the Europe, including France, Switzerland, Italy, Germany, even Greece. It's very popular in the Middle East. It's not very popular actually in the UK, and it's almost non-existent in the US. I would say that overall, at least in Europe, 10 to 15% of glaucoma surgeons offer deep sclerectomy to their patients.
So, you know, you said that the main reason that we would do a deep sclerectomy is to reduce the risk, or the perceived risk rather, of developing hypotony. Now, I really, really want to go into your paper because it's an amazing paper and there's some really good data in there. But, you know, before we do that, I was just, you know, could you just explain and maybe define for the listeners what exactly is hypotony?
Well, Sunil, these are very good questions. There are multiple definitions of hypotony. There is basically two broad categories. One is the so-called statistical or numerical hypotony, which it is just an IOP less than equal to 5 millimeters of mercury or below. And then there is another definition, which I believe is much more interesting, which is clinical hypotony, which means basically the occurrence of one of the possible complications related to hypotony, regardless of the IOP readings. As we know, there are no normal pressure values, both on the high side and on the low side. And I do believe that we should define hypotony based on the appearance of clinical complications rather than on the number itself.
You mentioned clinical complications of hypotony there. You know, what are the clinical complications? I mean, I'm aware of, you know, macular folds, soft eye, corneal edema. Are these right, and what are the others?
Yeah, of course. These are two very important complications. In addition to that, you may have choroidal detachments, you may have choroidal hemorrhage, you may even have a flat anterior chamber. These are the main complications due to hypotony.
So, you know, say you're seeing a patient in the clinic a few days after having a glaucoma filtration surgery and they've got clinical hypotony. How do you manage them?
Well, it depends. It depends when is the onset of hypotony. Usually early hypotony, which is happens, you know, a few days after glaucoma surgery, usually it's resolved by itself. On the other hand, the late hypotony, which is the hypotony happening even years after surgery, is usually a worse thing to have, because it's usually related to the bleb leakage and melting due to the long-term effect of mitomycin C on the conjunctiva. And in this case, patients often require surgical intervention to revise the glaucoma surgery.
So let's get into the paper now. This paper is a huge amount of work. So first of all, congratulations on, you know, such an incredible paper. A huge amount of work's gone into this. And you know, your paper aims to investigate the incidence and risk factors of hypotony and hypotony-associated complications after deep sclerectomy. Could you just tell us a bit about the paper and what did you find?
So yes, sure, Sunil. This was a retrospective cohort study including all DS and fake ODS cases performed in two UK institutions by an experienced glaucoma surgeon and his various fellows over years. We included 1,765 eyes of 1,385 patients with a median follow-up of approximately four years. At first, we look at incidence of numerical hypotony and clinical hypotony, and we found that despite being considered an hypotony-free procedure, hypotony itself is not that uncommon following deep sclerectomy. Specifically, approximately 13% of patients had numerical chronic hypotony over time, and of those, only a small proportion of patients developed complications. More interestingly, 15% of patients having an hypotony complications never had an IOP below 5 millimeters of mercury. These two results together indicate that hypotony, numerical hypotony and hypotony complications are really two distinct entities with some overlap. We also looked at factors associated with hypotony complications, and our study confirms some of the previous association, including male gender and a vascular and thin bleb. But we also identified novel association between the risk of having an hypotony complication and other factors, including previous vitreoretinal surgery, pigmentary glaucoma, and TDM perforation.
Yeah, that's really interesting. But I think the main question we need to ask then is, how do these numbers stack up when compared to trabeculectomy, which I suppose is considered the gold standard filtration surgery for glaucoma?
That's a very good question. In this study, this is a non-comparative study, and so we don't have a trabeculectomy group that we can use to compare the incidence and prevalence of hypotony and hypotony complication. In my feeling is that with modern trabeculectomy, like the Moorfield Safer surgical system, the incidence of hypotony won't be too much different from between these two procedures. Of course, you may probably know that there is no single trabeculectomy technique. There are many different trabeculectomy techniques where surgeons use or not adjustable sutures, or they use different concentration of mitomycin C, and so on. And I would say that overall, comparing our data to the data present in the literature, the incidence of hypotony after deep sclerectomy is at least as much as trabeculectomy, and maybe better.
In your paper, you've mentioned there that you've looked at the factors which you feel contribute to an increased risk of hypotony after performing deep sclerectomy. And in the paper, you've mentioned specific risk factors such as male gender, non-Caucasian ethnicity, the use of intraoperative bevacizumab, pigmentary glaucoma, previous vitreoretinal surgery, amongst others. You know, now, specifically about the previous vitreoretinal surgery, we know that this is a risk factor in itself for bleb procedure failure and bleb fibrosis in traditional trabeculectomy. But, you know, could you just explain why previous vitreoretinal surgery is a risk factor for clinical hypotony in patients, or why you think it is, in patients who have had deep sclerectomy?
That's a very good question. And this is also, I want to make a note that this is this association has been identified for the first time, mainly because most of the other studies in the literature included only patients with no previous intraocular surgery other than cataract extraction. And so this finding to me is pretty reasonable. One possibility is that we know in our experience that these eyes are softer than regular eyes. Even when we do cataract surgery, everything is much softer, and the tissue, are, you know, less stiffer than an eye with no previous vitreoretinal surgery. So it's possible to hypothesize some kind of tamponade effect and pressure effect of the vitreous body. Another important thing to consider, however, is that this study is a retrospective study, so identifies association rather than cause-effect relationships. So it's also possible that patients with previous vitreoretinal surgery have got longer axial length, which is not a parameter in our analysis. We know from previous study that longer axial length is associated with increased risk of having hypotony and hypotony complications. And finally, that's true that eyes with previous VR surgery tend to have worse trabeculectomy, and I believe also worse deep sclerectomy outcomes. And so one may argue whether these patients may benefit from a tube rather than a trabeculectomy or a deep sclerectomy, both to have higher long-term success rates and lower incidence of hypotony complications.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you talk about how you didn't look at axial length and how that might be the missing link between understanding why vitreoretinal surgery is a risk factor for hypotony after deep sclerectomy. I suppose it would have been interesting to have assessed the indication for the vitreoretinal surgery as well, because it might differ if the patient had a vitreoretinal surgery for a retinal detachment compared to if it was for a macular hole or an epiretinal membrane.
Sunil, that's a brilliant question. I thought about doing that, but the number of patients having a vitrectomy were not that high to run such a sophisticated and detailed subgroup analysis. And another thing that you, I think, somewhat related to axial length and vitreoretinal surgery is that patients with pigmentary glaucoma, which are usually young, male, myopic, and higher risk of retinal detachment, so we got all these four features, this patient had a higher risk of complications in other in our study due to hypotony.
Okay, so how did the results compare with what you were expecting?
To be honest with you, Sunil, results are pretty much what I expected, because also in my clinical experience, it is true that even though hypotony is not that frequent after deep sclerectomy, it happened to me to see a number of patients having hypotony after deep sclerectomy itself. And also, in the long run, deep sclerectomy is often converted to a full thickness procedure by means of a laser goniopuncture. And this can cause a direct communication between the anterior chamber and the subconjunctival space. We also do in the postoperative period the needlings with supplemental mitomycin C. So these eyes are eyes receiving mitomycin C and antimetabolites as similar to trabeculectomy. So it is not unexpected that 4 or 5 years later, at least in a proportion of this patient, the conjunctiva starts to leak, producing hypotony and hypotony complications.
So you're reasonably experienced at performing glaucoma filtration surgery, having done 18 months worth of fellowship in glaucoma already and about to embark on a second fellowship in Moorfields. So you've had your fair share of experience of performing filtration surgery. What is your preferred technique for management of patients with open angle glaucoma who require surgical intervention?
That's a very good question. I got no preferred technique, to be honest with you. I think that we need to have many different techniques in our toolbox, surgical toolbox, in being able to tailor our management on the needs of the single patients. For example, one big advantage of this sclerectomy over trabeculectomy is that it requires less intense follow-up, especially in the immediate post-operative period. And for example, in my future practice in Milan, it is not uncommon to have patients coming from different part of the Italian peninsula. And this may be a little bit complicated to see them every week for the first month.
So that's really interesting when you consider the strain that the COVID-19 pandemic has had on the hospital eye service and the ability for us to follow up patients as closely as we would have wanted to, particularly in patients who have had trabeculectomies and those kind of surgeries. So what do you think, therefore, is the future of the trabeculectomy? And what are the trends that we've seen in recent years in trabeculectomy?
First of all, let me say that I think the trabeculectomy is a very good technique, and it's possibly the most powerful technique that we have. It's maybe the only procedure that can guarantee a single-digit IOP in the long run, at least in a significant proportion of patients. But on the other end, we are facing our downward trend in trabeculectomy performance in Europe, in the UK, but also in Asia, in Australia, and especially in the US. It's very interesting to read. There are a couple of articles looking at the rates of trabeculectomy over time in the US. It's very interesting to see how in some countries, for example, like in Kentucky, the performance of trabeculectomy is approximately 0.1%. So there is a trend toward less trabeculectomy performed in the future.
And do you think that our better overall screening of glaucoma is meaning that as patients are started on treatment earlier, there's potentially less need in the long term for trabeculectomy?
Yeah, of course, that's a very good point. The earlier you catch glaucoma, the higher are the chances that you can preserve the visual field and the vision-related quality of life in that single patient. And of course, we know that population is aging. We are living longer and longer than before. And so I do believe that glaucoma surgery will always have a role in the future. It may even increase because of population aging.
Sure. Okay. So based upon the results of your study, which patient subsets would you say that you would actually rather perform a trabeculectomy on rather than a deep sclerectomy?
I would, based on the result of this study and other studies looking at deep sclerectomy outcomes, I would perform trabeculectomy for sure in patients with angle closure glaucoma, especially in the presence of plateau iris or in the presence of PIS, especially at the superior quadrant. And also, I will definitely perform trabeculectomy in patients with very advanced glaucoma requiring a very low target IOP, or also in patients with normal tension glaucoma, which requiring a low target IOP as well.
Okay. And conversely then, I know you've already mentioned some of the risk factors and benefits of deep sclerectomy, but which patients would you then rather perform a deep sclerectomy in rather than a trabeculectomy?
Yeah, I would probably perform in patients with a primary open angle glaucoma, possibly phakic, possibly with a target IOP within the mid-teens.
Okay.
or even low teens.
Okay. So Alessandro, you know, just to finish off, I've just really got one final question for you. And that's really, you know, what take-home messages would you have for the listeners about deep sclerectomy as a result of your paper?
Yeah, first of all, to inform patients that deep sclerectomy is not a hypotony-free procedure, that hypotony and hypotony complications are still a possibility, not that uncommon after deep sclerectomy itself. And also to understand that there are some specific phenotype of patients where deep sclerectomy is expected to, and you know, to work a little bit worse and possibly produce hypotony complications more frequently, such as patients with a previous VR surgery or pigmentary glaucoma. And I think that the knowledge of properties, pro and cons of a surgical technique, it's very important to tailor that technique to the single patient.
Okay, Alessandro, got one very last question. I know that I said that the previous question was going to be the last one, but I think having you on the show, I couldn't really not ask you this question. And this is really for the benefit of those trainees who've got their exams coming up in the coming months. And Alessandro, you know, imagine you've got a patient in front of you on the slit lamp who has got hypotony, you know, clinical hypotony in the immediate post-operative period. You know, could you just walk us through, you know, in a stepwise approach, really, how would you approach the management of this patient?
Okay, first of all, what's the meaning of clinical hypotony? It's choroidal detachment, a flat AC with the, you know...
Got a patient with an IOP of 2, you know, 3 days of after having had a trabeculectomy, and they've got, you know, a shallow AC with some macular folds.
Okay, I do think that if there is no touch between the cornea and the lens, especially in the phakic patients, I think it's reasonably to wait a few weeks. And it's also important to understand what's the reason behind the you know hypotony. Sometimes it's possible to have hyposecretion of fluid inside the eye because of the surgical shock or even some carryover effect of the topical hypertensive medications. Other time it's possible to have an overfiltration to the scleral flap, or in other circumstances it's possible to have leakage through the conjunctiva. It may be useful to give a cyclopentolate or atropine to, you know, pull back the high-risk lens diaphragm and deepening the anterior chamber, and then just wait. If and I do believe that if things doesn't settle by their own, the best things is to bring the patient back to the theater and address the cause of the hypotony itself, which it's usually a scleral flap which is not tight enough. So it would be interesting to open up the conjunctiva again and to put one more releasable suture to make the flap watertight.
And I suppose that's probably something that you do sooner if there were more, you know, detrimental clinical effects of the hypotony, or if there was, you know, iridocorneal touch as well.
Yeah, of course. If you got a iridocorneal touch, you may even consider reforming the anterior chamber with some viscoelastic, okay, with some OBD. And another important thing for the trainee, the most important way to treat hypotony actually is to prevent hypotony, which in the set of trabeculectomy means to, you know, put some nice tight suture, perhaps releasable suture to close tightly the scleral flap, and then close carefully the conjunctival to prevent any conjunctival leakage.
And you mentioned there, you know, hypotony due to the surgical shock of the procedure. You know, do intensive topical steroids have a role to play here as well?
Well, usually that's very controversial. Some people they may want to stop the topical steroid in this scenario to kind of facilitate some conjunctival scarring. and this in turn can help raising the IOP, but it's something that I usually do not like to do.
Well, Alessandro, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much, Sunil.
As always, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to get involved, talk about your work, or have any feedback, send us a message at communications@rcops.ac.uk.